afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Wednesday, June 14th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Well, they did do the interest rates today. The Federal Reserve did forge ahead with a rate increase and additional plans to tighten monetary policy. We will be talking about that and how it affected the gold prices today after the first segment today, as we have Wendy Wilson joining us. So let's first get to the gold and silver prices, and then we'll have a chat with Wendy Wilson from a carry herbs. We have gold down $860 today. It was up most of the day, $12.13. Once the rate increase came out, even the quarter point, it dropped down to $12.5850. Silver was up 4 cents today at $16.95. Platinum was up $9 today at $936. Palladium was down $3 at $885. You had the USDX also did a reversal. It is now up 0.07 at 97.07. Crude oil was down another $1.66 at 44.80. And we'll talk about that also later on in the program. And the paper markets today, nothing seems to phase the paper markets. The Dow was up 46 points at 21,374. A little pressure on the NASDAQ and S&P. The NASDAQ was down 25 points, 6194, and the S&P was down 2 at 2437. 10-year yield down 0.07 at 2.14%. Euro had an up day, 112.06. I expect if the dollar stays at the level it is today, you'll probably see a little weakness in that tomorrow. Everything's been fairly quiet. All eyes have been focused on Virginia and the D.C. and, of course, what happened this morning. We'll also talk about that here at the first program. I'd like to welcome Wendy Wilson from Healthcare Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about men's health today. It's been in the news lately. I don't know if you've noticed a lot of the commercials for healthcare being, addressing men's health. June actually is the month to raise awareness for men's health. So you get a lot of media-driven marketing campaigns now in the healthcare system that are stressing to men the prevention type of action they need to take. So men are urged by the healthcare establishment, you know, get into your doctor's office, get a checkup, you know, run the recommended tests. But men are the least likely to see their doctor, or for any even prevention type reasons. So if they do go, they're prompted to go by a family member, their employer, or if they really are experiencing some serious symptoms. So this male aversion to seeing the doctor is not just in the U.S. Men in other countries have the same aversion. So there's this international push to get men into the doctor's office. So we're going to try to take a look at some alternative ways men can be proactive with their health and keep them all happy because they have that doctor aversion. Now, Bill Richardson, he was a congressman in 1994, he said this: recognizing and preventing men's health problems is not just a man's issue because of the impact on wives, mothers, daughters, sisters. Men's health is truly a family issue, he said, which prompted a whole legislation, which we'll get into in a little bit here. So this international media hunt for adult male patients is all over the world. Now, countries like Denmark, Scotland, the UK, New Zealand, Italy, Spain, Belgium, Canada, the Netherlands, they're all just getting swamped with the healthcare advertising. They're driving men's health to stop men from the message is, men, you stop making the mistake and get into the doctor's office. There are no more excuses. Get examined. And that's pretty much the message. Have you seen any of these ads, Al, lately?
I see them, but I pay no attention to them.
Well,
I'll be going to see the doctor when they make it like a sports bar. You understand? Instead of going into a hospital or something like that, have the doctor serve beer.
You know, okay.
Do the bartender.
Well, some doctors have really taken their message to the road literally. They're going on these coast-to-coast campaigns. They're making city stops. They're doing workshops and also radio interviews. And they're trying to reach men with analogies like, you know, car maintenance, body, human body maintenance. But the issues doctors are not addressing is that patients don't like the treatment options medicine is offering should a problem actually exist. So people are kind of shying away from the risky drug-induced symptom management medicines and no cure scenario. So this white coat avoidance, you know, I understand why people don't want to go to the doctor. According to now Dr. Eric Klein, he says 60% of men don't see their doctor because he feels they're just disinterested in their own health. He also reports that if men go to the doctor, 20% are pressured by their wives to go. And the rest go for serious symptoms or if they're required by their employer to go. Now, John Hopkins Medicine states that in the U.S., there's actually a crisis going on with regard to men's health, and it's negatively affecting communities. They are stating that aside from diabetes and blood pressure and prostate health, men are overweight and suffer from sexual health problems. Men in particular are stating they don't like going to the doctor. Here's some of the reasons. See if anything, I'm leaving anything out, Al. They say they're too busy. Yep, here's the list. Here's the list. They say they're too busy. They don't have a doctor or they don't have insurance. They say, I don't want to spend the time and the money. They say, there's nothing wrong. Why go? I don't want to waste the doctor's time. I don't like uncomfortable exams, which healthcare is calling probophobia. And also, they're afraid of what the doctor may find, and they don't like healthcare treatments. Did I miss anything?
No, other than the beer.
Now, the psychologists now are weighing in on this crisis in America. They say that the subject they think that's the media's pounding a message about masculinity and how vulnerable men can be, which is the wrong message, is what they're saying. So going to the doctor is like asking for help, and that goes against gender norms. They say that this explains why men tend to avoid the doctor or are casual about their health issues, because men don't feel in control when they go to the doctor's office, and since they do not frequent the doctor, they're seeing someone they're not familiar with and they're not comfortable with. Now, annual checkups for men, not part of their normal routine, so getting men to get their blood pressure checked, screen for diabetes, cholesterol, or colorectal cancer, isn't that easy to get them to do that. And this is why healthcare is pouring a lot of money into these print and TV ads, as well as the mobile apps and toolkits to actually motivate men any way they can, and using guilt is just not out of the question. They'll use anything they can. Now, Dr. Williams Rhodes, he's a geriatric physician at the Lutheran General Hospital in Illinois. He says men stop seeing their doctor after their pediatrician and return only when they're sick, end of quote. Which is pretty normal, isn't it, Al?
Seems normal to me.
Right. Well, there's another study that says the tougher they are, the harder it is to deal with them. In 2016, Rutgers University did a study to get a better grasp why men avoid the doctor and how medicine can convince them to go see their doctor. The fear message that medicine has projected to men is that they're going to die an average of 5 years earlier than women, so they should go see their doctor right away. So this advertising hasn't been successful. It's not been a good motivator. And what their study revealed is if men go to the doctor, they'll select a male physician. That's understandable due to the prostate exam. And they say more detailed reasons why men don't see their doctor was included in their study. And they said there's masculinity beliefs here. They said that men feel they should be tough and brave and self-reliant and not complain. They also said men don't want to appear weak and symptoms make them feel dependent on others. They said the tougher a man is, the less honest he is with reporting health problems. And men are less likely than women to be honest with a doctor about symptoms. So they also find these tendencies are the same with female patients who don't discuss symptoms if they feel they should be more brave and self-reliant. So the more masculine they are, the less honest they'll be about their health situation. I don't know if I agree with that, but that's what their study said. Do you say Yeah, well, the UK said the same thing. They had another study said pretty much the same thing. But over in the UK, it's a little different scenario because they got the socialized healthcare over there. And men are reporting that they don't go see the doctor unless they're really sick because they don't want to waste the doctor's time and prevent really sick people from getting an appointment because there's a longer wait time. So I understand that part completely. I really do. Well, do you have any idea why medicine really cares about your health, Al, and they're pushing for this?
Because I have money in my wallet that I haven't spent on the doctor.
Oh, you're so smart. According to the U.S. Census, there's about 87 million adult males in the U.S. that haven't seen the doctor. The national cost of a visit to a general practitioner for your checkup is about $200, and if you have insurance, your copay is about $49. Establishment is looking at a minimum of $174 million in lost annual revenue from guys not going in and getting a checkup. So men know that if a problem gets detected, that'll mean an average of a minimum 2 visits a year to the doctor, and they just don't want to do it. They just don't want to do it. And you know what? You know what guys are doing then, Al? Any idea?
Does it have something to do with the sports bar?
Well, no. Actually, University of California says that more men and their wives are consulting the internet with regard to health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So women actually are doing a lot of searching for their spouses and looking up information. Men will typically take the stance of trust but verify if any treatment's recommended to them. And the California study stated that patients are turning to researching their treatment options, and patients seem to be arming themselves with information, and this can rub the physicians the wrong way, and some of them get a little defensive. The study found 70% of patients searched the internet for information that they were planning to discuss with their doctor. About 40% will actually print off the information and bring it with them to the appointment. So the internet has become a mainstream source of information, and people are becoming more health information seekers on the internet, which I think is not too bad.
It might be a good thing, but it could also be a dangerous thing. If you tend to diagnose yourself and treat yourself, you could be treating yourself for something that.
Well, and you know, people ask me, I say, hey, it's okay if you want to go see your doctor, you know, hopefully get a good diagnosis, and then you can see what your options are. You're not shooting in the dark. You're not really shooting in the dark. But there's a lot of spousal anxiety over there because, you know, women say they care about their spouse and they want to make sure he's healthy and well. You know, and I've kind of worked in the medical establishment, and over the years I noticed that they use a lot of fear to motivate patients. And any kind of mistakes by doctors usually gets blamed on the nursing staff. So there's a reason for second and third opinions, right? Yeah.
Again, I think it has something to do with how much money I have left in my wallet.
Well, I was privy to two recent cases, and just a quick synopsis. A 40-year-old man from Minnesota experienced some abdomen pain. He went to the ER. They ran tests, and they told him he had fecal matter behind his liver that indicated his colon had ruptured, and they were recommending emergency surgery to remove the large intestine and install a stoma and a bag. But he turned down the recommendation because he didn't have a fever, and so he got a second opinion, and it was just inflammation. They treated him with antibiotics and anti-inflammatories, and he was able to go home. And he later found out that the surgery treatment that was recommended to him was based solely on an assumption because someone saw a little shadowing on the study.
Well,
can you imagine?
I know. There's a guy who's got to be grateful.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, then there's the 50-year-old man that went to the ER in February. He had chest pains. He was told he had pneumonia after they ran some studies. They sent him home with antibiotics. Then later on in May, his legs swelled up to his knees. He could hardly breathe. He was rushed again to the ER, where he was actually suffering from congestive heart failure. So there's a big difference between fluid in the lungs, pneumonia, and fluid around the heart, congestive heart failure. You know, this really explains why malpractice insurance is expensive, doesn't it?
Well, again. Somebody's got dollars in their wallet, and somebody else says, ooh, how How about some for me?
Well, I personally wouldn't worry about offending doctors if you wanted to take a bunch of questions with you that you found on the internet, because, you know, knowledge is power. And, you know, at least you're getting answers to your questions, hopefully. And I think people should think about treatments that strengthen them instead of just, you know, manage them. And so there's a lot of things we can do out there. But we've been kind of conditioned to accept drugs as symptom management and surgery, and that's nothing else. There's nothing else. But, you know, there is something else, and God made sure we had something else. About 50% of the U.S. refuses to trust that alternative therapies work. 40% of the U.S. is busy learning how to work them and make them work for them. And the remaining 10% are mixing drugs and natural therapies and discovering that doesn't work. And the reason that doesn't work is because drugs tend to be toxic, and toxins work against nutrients. So when you use drugs and medicinal herbs, you're actually negating the benefit. Toxins create a weakness, nutrients strengthen the system, so you have two therapies working against one another. So if you go to the doctor, you know, get a diagnosis, you can certainly research your options and get second opinions and, you know, make the decision that's right for you out there. But I just thought I'd let people know they're getting pressured. Men are going to be getting pressured to get examined. They really are.
Has it always been this way? I mean, 100 years ago, were men equally unlikely to go to the doctor, or is this a relatively new phenomenon?
Well, I think it is a gender norm thing. Guys don't like to appear weak. They don't like to complain. They don't like to be a burden to somebody. And they certainly, you know, if they don't know the doctor, you know, it's hard for them. They have to trust but verify. And it is kind of a lot of work to run down those options. So that's where the wife comes in. She helps them out. But if you're looking for products to strengthen organ cleansing for as a maintenance program to kind of reduce your risk of disease, we have a bunch of kits: kidney, bladder, prostate, pandemic kits. We have herbs for diabetes to help your body manage those insulin levels naturally. So these are all strengtheners and not weak toxic drugs that are working on you. So if anybody's interested, we have our Father's Day special, and it runs through the 19th, and we just brought back the reward point program. Anybody that's shopping online in our store, so they can give us a call if they want a free catalog at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit us at the web, thepowerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy. Very interesting. I'll be making an appointment with my doctor. What year is this? 27, 28? One of these years, I'll be going back to see him.
Okay.
Thanks very much. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday. It's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Give Wendy a call. I'm Alfred Addisk. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, we had the, as I mentioned before, Wendy's segment, the Federal Reserve officials, they went ahead with their quarter point interest rate increase. This is for the third time in 6 months, and they're going to continue, or they're thinking of continuing the hike one more time in 2017. They're also going to, they released additional plans to tighten their monetary policy, even though, you know, they're showing a little lower inflation rate. And I think we had most of the rate increase already dealt, figured in on the gold and silver prices. Gold and silver were extremely high. Silver was up over 2.5% this morning. Gold was up $12, $13, $14. I think this had a lot to do with the shooting in Virginia. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. We're going to talk about it briefly. I don't think there's any new information that's come out since this morning. And I'm sure all the listeners already know about it and are pretty well up to date, so we won't spend too much time on that. But after the rate increase came out, you did see gold reverse. The dollar did get a little bit stronger, which we anticipate with the rate increase. And I expect it's going to be temporary. I think once we get through the day and tomorrow and we get back to, you know, what's going on with our economy and what's going on in Washington and so forth, we will have, you know, gold will regain its increases or at least become a little steady around the levels that we're seeing around the 1258. 1300 is a big number to get over, you know, psychological number to get over. So it's going to be beaten down numerous times before once it goes over 1300 this time around. I think I said it before, but I think this time around it will stay above the 1300. They're both showing strong comebacks to the pressure that we've been seeing, and today was a perfect example. They came out and the Federal Reserve started talking about how they're going to start gradually rolling off their fixed amount of assets on a monthly basis. They're going to roll it off, start little and gradually increase it until they get to, I think, 30 or 50 billion a month. That's still going to take, they want to touch on $2 to $2.5 trillion. How many years is that, Al?
I don't know. I think it's something like 25. at least at the opening, at their opening rate, it translates into something like 25 years.
Yeah.
I've said before, I don't think they can get rid of it. I mean, they may be able to make some gesture and they may be able to fool around with it. I don't think they can get rid of that $4.5 billion, because one of the problems they're going to have is finding somebody to buy it, the debt instruments that they're holding. And it may be that if they try to sell them, they're going to find out that people are going to pay maybe half of what the face value is on those debt instruments. And they may have to admit that their market, their presumed value, $4.5 million or $4.5 trillion, it may be that the stocks they paid $4.5 trillion or bonds they paid $4.5 trillion for, maybe it's only worth $2 trillion today. a lot of this, or at least some of this, was something like a toxic asset back in the day. Do they have to, and they paid face value for those toxic assets. I don't know that they can admit that they, oh dear, we don't have $4.5 trillion. We lost $2 trillion on those investments.
And the thing of it is, you know, they're going to have fuzzy math when they're doing all of this. So we don't even, they could have $10 trillion on their books. I mean, we wouldn't know. So, I mean, I don't believe anything that's released. So it is what it is. But we also have to know, too, people think that quantitative easing stopped. But as their, as my understanding, as their bonds were maturing, they were still reinvesting into bonds. So quantitative easing really didn't stop. They were still reinvesting the money when their bonds were coming up and taking that money and doing whatever they were doing with it. Not sure if it was into the mortgage securities or not, but so quantitative easing was still going on, and even on our rates.
Some people say it's still going on.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. They're still reinvesting their profit. When their bonds mature, they take the money and reinvest it. They don't call it quantitative easing, but that's what they're doing. They're still buying, you know, into the system. So,
and it's not just the Federal Reserve. It's central banks around the world.
Yeah.
And I don't mean all of them are acting the same way at the same time, but I've seen reports that collectively they are purchasing $200 billion worth of investments a month.
Mm-hmm.
On a global basis, they keep on another $200 billion, another $200 billion. Well, it's global quantitative easing, and how long can it continue?
That is the only explanation, along with your corporations buying back their own shares, why stock markets are at the levels that they are. There isn't anything else that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's they've been holding these markets up in order to maintain the illusion that we are still in a solid, stable market and a solid, stable economy. I mean, what would people think about the economy right now if the Dow Jones was at 16,000 instead of 21,000?
Exactly.
And that could be, where reality would take us if the governments or the central banks of the world weren't pumping a couple $100 billion per month into the markets.
I've always believed that our stock market at this point should be around 10,000. I think that's the reality number of our stock market. I mean, it should be much lower than, but I mean, even based on government numbers and based on the reality of government and Wall Street and so forth, I would say that the stock market should be trading around 10,000.
Well,
so, and if the markets drop by, it might just be there soon, too.
Well, it may be. We've got, here's, you talked about Ray Dalio a little bit yesterday. He's a famed hedge fund billionaire. According to CNN Money, the headline is "The Very Dark Warning from Billionaire Investor Ray Dalio." It says, famed hedge fund billionaire Ray Dalio fears the world today looks an awful lot like it did before World War II.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Well, I don't recall a reference to World War II, but
I think perhaps I did on my Thursday program.
Well, Dalio's words are closely watched because he founded one of the world's largest hedge funds, Bridgewater Associates, with $160 billion in assets. Like many Americans, Dalio seems preoccupied with the political situation in the U.S. He published an ominous LinkedIn post on Friday. He doesn't just Twitter, Melody. He's an intellectual. He posts on LinkedIn. He published an ominous LinkedIn post on Friday warning investors that for the first time since just before World War II, there is great economic, social, and political polarity that has given rise to populist leaders. Dalio cited a Bridgewater study that showed conflicts between the common man and the elites often take place during periods of time that sound like the current atmosphere. He's talking about some kind of revolutions when the common man and the elite. What does he mean by the elite, Melody? He means people able to bribe the government to pass laws to favor them. That's ultimately what he means. People have that.
Perhaps in his book, that's not what I would.
Disordinate, inordinate influence on the government. Or at least that's the way I look at it. And they get the government to broker laws. We will give you money if you pass laws that allow us to take money from the ordinary people.
I think the elite is a much bigger picture, but.
Yeah. It's one of their characteristics, at least in my opinion. The characteristics include, they means the characteristics of these times of conflict between common man and the elite. He says the characteristics include times of economic stress due to wealth and opportunity disparities, unequal income, all right, the disparity in the distribution of income in a particular country. When people fear their country's core values are being threatened by foreigners, and when government seems so dysfunctional that radical change is thought to be necessary. That description seems fairly accurate to me. This country's core values are being threatened by the influx of, at least it, there's that appearance, by the influx of illegal aliens, for example, some legal aliens, refugees, the rest of it. No one seems to be really caring about the fundamental values of this country, and it makes people who believe in those values and think they're entitled to believe in those values, it makes them anxious. They can swap their borders. Why are they letting me share jobs to the countries? What is here? Who are us? And the answer is it's not apparent. We don't have a collection of people in Washington that are working to do what the majority of the American people. They're working for special interests. It's the sort of thing that antagonizes the sense of conflict between the common man and the elites and for special interests. Dalio said history shows these conditions can give rise to a strong-minded, confrontational fighter who pursues nationalistic, protectionist and militaristic policies that lead to more domestic and international conflicts. Well, it certainly sounds like he's describing Trump. Doesn't say he described Trump in this article, but when he talks about a strong-minded, confrontational fighter who pursues nationalist, protectionist and militaristic policies, could be Donald Trump or someone like him that he's talking about. In some cases, this threat, this conflict within countries led to democracies becoming dictatorships and wars. That's his concluding warning. And he's just saying, look, there's a lot of stuff happening right now. You know, the shooting today is evidence of the kind of stress that exists in this country right now. And the guy, from my understanding, the guy that did the shooting, the report was he's a white guy wearing a blue shirt. And when I first read that, I thought, what do they care about his shirt? Well, his shirt color is interesting because he's apparently a Democrat. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter, according to one report. All right. I think that's the perspective. They didn't say he's a Bernie Sanders supporter. He's a Bernie Sanders supporter, and he's wearing the blue shirt. It may have been just an offhand remark, but it sounds like, oh, he's a Democrat.
Yeah, you know, and that's the whole problem. You know, if they wouldn't have a show or play in New York City Park Square, you wouldn't have a comedian holding up a chopped head. I mean, it is almost they are creating, they are pushing the agenda for this stuff to happen.
Yeah.
And
It becomes acceptable. Violence is becoming acceptable.
But
and
it
it's
isn't.
Been, well,
it's not acceptable.
It's dangerous. That's
it's
for
not
sure.
Acceptable.
And it's a question of, will this bring people to their senses where somebody says, wait a second, we need to stop this. All right, or people are going to get shot. Or will they continue to say this is, a wonderful artistic an expression of artistic temperament, and nobody's going to say that exactly, but that's what they've said about a play, that they have a character like Trump who is assassinated in a play, and people are describing it as, you know, great art and the rest of it. Art imitates life. Life imitates art. I mean, is Kathy Griffin going to sit back and say, you know, this her idea about having a holding Trump's severed head, did that play a role in what's happened in Washington?
When you talk,
and is it something you want?
When we look at these demonstrations, and I said for a long time, people, whether they pay these people directly, whether the money is funded to a particular group, and who knows what they do with that money, but the money that is flowing to these people for these demonstrations and so forth, where they become, where they destroy property, the lives of people's lives are in danger and so forth, that should not be tolerated. It's okay to demonstrate. It's okay to voice your opinion. But when you go beyond to the point of destruction, and it's got to be stopped. It should be stopped. And
I don't know if it should be stopped in the way you're saying. I'm not saying this is a good thing,
well,
but I am
what,
saying some people are ready to shoot. Does that indicate
this,
they're crazy, or does it indicate
they don't have a
that
clue.
The government has mistreated them?
I don't think they understand. They're not going out there because they have a cause. They're going out there because they're being manipulated. They're being conditioned. They're being brainwashed into doing these things, is what I believe. Maybe not all, but a large part of it.
When you start doing this thing with holding up severed heads and killing cars on stage, it is conducive to violence. It's only can do. We've got one guy who got one shooting out of 320 million people. It's
you
not as if the sky is falling,
fire
but
in a movie
it
house.
Is a leaf in the breeze.
You don't call fire in a movie house. And I believe they were talking about the last time that the lady that was shot in Arizona, five or six people were shot around her. They were at a outside event, stomping their political cause and so forth. That person who did all that damage to those people got life in prison. I'm there, what? So they have a guy sitting in prison. I'm sure I'm hearing about this too. TV all day long. It's like, no, I do believe in the death penalty. And they shouldn't just get life in prison. Not people who do these things. They just get snakes on their hands. There's no. And I remember reading an article. I think it was Pat Buchanan, and he talked about there's no accountability. We used to have God that we counted to. You know, hey, when we were little and we did bad things, you were going to go to hell. So you didn't want to do bad things. Now, it doesn't matter. It happens to you when you do bad things.
They run commercials.
That's what they do,
Melody. That's our modern punishment. We have to listen to some commercials. Oh, yeah. Survival, please stay tuned. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. We're talking about the problem shooting at a number of congressmen. A couple of people were hit. I don't know that there's one person who may be in danger, real danger. It wasn't a serious problem exactly. And I think the lesson in all of this is all of us need to check ourselves and not overreact. What we're going to see from this is there are going to be people who will be chanting, say, gun control, gun control, gun control. Well, they already have gun control in Washington, D.C. The others are going to look at it and say the reason this guy didn't kill some people is because there were cops there that had guns. If the congressman had had guns, it would be perhaps less likely that they would be shot at.
That's what I said.
Everybody's ready to use this. We have all embraced that idea that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Rahm Emanuel and Hillary Clinton espoused that idea back a few years ago. If there's a crisis, don't deal with it. Reasonably exploit it. Take advantage of it. You know, make political hay out of it. Get what you can out of it. We have to stop that. We've got to start being reasonable, and that includes people that are prone to shoot. It includes people who are perhaps likely to be shot at, as like congressmen, for example. Somebody's got to start being reasonable rather than just exploiting crises.
You know, and it just is another sign of our decay of our society. This is where we are. I mean, it's like we're going to have Chicago everywhere or Baltimore everywhere. And, you know, these were supposedly a safe area. And this guy was from Illinois, for heaven's sakes. We do have to. And things, the more we're involved also, and I'm kind of going someplace else, the more we're involved in the Middle East and the things that are happening over there. If you just read some of the headlines, one of my favorite websites is antiwar.com. Just their headlines, staggering civilian deaths from U.S. airstrikes. Mattis says the attacks on Syria forces were self-defense, but they're civilian deaths. You know, the Senate vote failed to block the Saudi arms deal. So Trump's, they're going to quickly move to deliver these smart bombs to the Saudis. You know, you have Mattis in Afghanistan. He's ready to blame Russia for Qatar crisis. You have Trump is leaving the Afghan troop levels to Mattis. Mattis says we're not winning in Afghanistan. We're going to increase the troops. It's such a tears. The world is going insane. When we see what has happened in London, you've had these cars attacked. There's a huge building that was on fire last night. I don't know how many deaths were in that high-rise building. It's like, well, how did that happen? You know, how do you scorch a huge high-rise like that? People are just dying. There's people are starving.
You know, one of the things, you know, 100 years ago, you didn't know what was happening beyond your own community.
I can only imagine what happened. It might have been a lot worse then because no one knew. Now they can't do what they used to do because, you're right, we have access to
Oh, my gosh, they're killing people 1,000 miles away from me. This is, you know, we get the news from around the world, and that news, if it bleeds, it leads. That news frequently focuses on violence that's taking place around the world. I don't know that that's a good thing. I don't know. You know, it may be that if we were just dealing, look, here's the problems that are happening in my community right now. And you'd be here and you'd be listening to the problems that take place in your community right now. Maybe we'd be better off. This global perspective keeps us hyperventilating. We are all concerned that some, oh my God, something's going on. Did you see that? Oh, what? You know, I'm not sure what the answer is, but it's easy to point at some of the problems, or at least potential causes for the problem, and we are tending to overreact. Or are we? Maybe we're tending to, you know, it's one of those things where I don't know. How many times, how long has the government been violating the Constitution in this country? For example, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt.
From day one.
You have to wonder.
From day one.
No, not from day one. We had gold and silver coin up into the silver until 1968 and that sort of thing.
There was other ways the Constitution was probably violated.
Oh, there's plenty of ways it's violated. There's plenty of ways that it's ignored. We have a government that takes it for granted that it can violate the people's law. And that's what the Constitution is. We, the people, in order to form a more perfect union, to ordain and establish this Constitution. It's the people's law. And the government says, we don't have to listen to the people. That's crazy talk. Well, maybe you do. And maybe the idea that we can, under the pretext of emergency or doing good deeds or whatever, maybe we can't just violate the Constitution. And there's 100 things you can point at. I'm not just even talking, I'm talking about Congress at the moment, but we can be talking about, you know, people in general. We are, I don't know. I don't know that we've ever been law-abiding. All right, in the sense that a lot of people might imagine.
We're a little more God-abiding.
We're a little more opportunistic than maybe we should be.
But, you know, you could go back in various times in history, and it's always been violent. What should make this time any different? We're supposed to be more civilized? Violence has always been there.
Oh, absolutely.
Violence.
I understand that.
And we talk a lot about, and when I go on other programs, this is why we have to prepare ourselves. That's control what we can control around
us.
That's
what I'm saying.
And it does come by being responsible and protecting your area, family.
We have situations where we allow some groups, classes, whatever, they can get away with murder. And we justify, we say, well, we don't want to talk about that. We don't want to embarrass people. We don't. Look, somewhere along the line, the law's got to apply equally to everybody. And we can't have special interests based on wealth or based on race or based on gender or based on what part of the country you're in. You're not entitled to things that you haven't personally earned. The whole idea that you can be inevitably creates jealousies and animosities that contribute to people finally hitting the wall and predisposes them to they are saying this isn't fair. What was the movie Network that was from back in the '70s maybe, and it's the prophet of the airways telling everybody stick your head out the window and holler, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Well, we've kind of got to that. We're kind of at the point where we're ready to stick our heads out the window and holler, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. But what are you going to do about it? There's something where we are abiding. You know, the government is willing, the government's willing to transgenders. All right, they have special rights. We've got special rights for gays. And if gays want to get married, we got to marry them. And you might not be gay. It might be contrary to what it says in the Bible, but to give the gays equal rights. What do they think this is going to do? How many rights do they think they can take away before people get angry? And maybe stupidly angry. I'm not saying they're right, but somebody's got to pay attention. Somebody's got to actually pay attention to fundamental values and not just laugh at them and say, ha, 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 we'll do what we want, to heck with the people. And nobody's doing that. We've got this, you know, crisis is a terrible thing to waste. So let's take advantage of it. Let's exploit it. Let's get what we can. And I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. I don't know what the Congress has said so far about this, but again, I'm assuming we're going to see it used as an excuse for more gun control. We're going to see people that are trying to more police protection for congressmen. I don't know where it's all going to go. And I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. I'm just saying somebody's got to realize a lot of people are under stress, and it's not enough to artificially sustain the stock market and tell people everything's cool. You know, that's maybe one of the biggest parts. Nobody's really listening. A lot of people who should be listening are just saying, I don't have to listen to these people. They're not giving me any money. I only listen to people who give me money. Somebody's got to listen as a matter of respect. And if they won't respect the public, then who knows what the public's going to do. And it's not just a situation where Congress has to listen to the public. The public has to listen to Congress to some degree. There has to be some level of mutual respect. I will listen to you. You will listen to me. Maybe we'll come to some sort of an agreement and understanding, but it doesn't seem to be happening. It's like Ray Dalio was saying in his discussion. He's saying, we have this incredible polarization. And it really is. I can't remember a time when we were as polarized in this country as we have
are
been.
Are we truly polar? Are we so polarized, or is it a situation that's being created?
I don't understand you. I don't understand exactly what you're.
Are we truly polarized, or
are we truly polarized, or do we just think we're polarized? And what is the difference? I don't know. I can't make up my mind. I'm going to have to see a shrink to find out if I am. Am I, or am I not polarized?
With the media, with everything that they do, and how they report, people believe what they're told through the media.
Maybe they do, or maybe they automatically don't. I mean, there's a point where we've been lied to so many times, I expect to be lied to.
The majority of people listen to mainstream media and believe it. There's only a small...
They believe those parts of mainstream media that mainstream media reports that are consistent with their own values. And what I mean by that is the Democrats listen to mainstream media and they hear those stories that make them angry as Democrats.
And the
Republicans listen to mainstream media and they listen to the stories that make them mad as Republicans.
My point is the media has taken it so beyond the scope of reporting news. So how polarized are we really truly? If it wasn't for the media, you take the media out of the equation, people probably would get along,
that's part of the social compact.
I suppose
if we're going to give the media First Amendment privileges to say what needs to be said, the media, the correlation is the media has to tell us the truth. And we are, again, we've got media that's just stirring us up like a bunch of hornets in order to sell a few more seats in an auditorium or sell more advertising on their website or their.
That's what I was trying to get across. You know, so if the media was actually telling the truth.
And they were not just self-serving.
Sensationalizing. If they weren't sensationalizing.
What is right for the majority of the people?
They weren't sensationalizing everything. Reporting the truth,
then they wouldn't sell as many newspapers, Melody.
I guess not.
I don't know. It's one of these things. You look at it, and it's easy to point a finger and say this is the problem. And I'm sure you could listen to someone else who is more of a liberal, a leftist. They can look at the same information. They can point the finger at a different source and say, no, this is the problem. And who can say who exactly is right about this? But I think we have to stop shouting when we're pointing that finger. And we really have to look at some evidence, and we have to be prepared to point the finger at our side as well as the other guy's side and try to reach some civil agreement, and that just doesn't seem to be happening. And I don't know what the causes are, but it's not a new thing. People talk about polarization in Congress. The Democrats versus the Republicans. It's not the faithful opposition or whatever the term has been. I can't recall clearly. But it's not just people do not respect each other. A lot of them. And that's a dangerous thing. There was a time when people had to respect each other. We did respect each other. I don't mean everybody had great respect for everyone else, but there seems to have been more respect than maybe we have right now. Right now, you can make a name for yourself by being disrespectful. You can do it in comedy. You can do it in entertainment. You can do it in the news. Show everybody how smart you are. But I'm not sure that that's doing us any good. And all of us need to look and check ourselves before we start shooting. And before we start antagonizing someone else to shoot. I'm Alfred Adams here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in then. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.